A tale of love, peace, and friendship.
Dear Grandpa Tree, I wish that we could stay friends forever. Me, Dashen, and Haiyan.
Friends forever!
Friends forever!
Based on real events, Echoes of Ku Liang, a radio drama series, relates the warm and vibrant life stories of the Ku Liang friends set in the historical tapestry of the 20th century.
Match!
We'll gather the balls for you!
Let's see if we can catch some big fish and ask my mom to make some fishbowl soup tonight!
Do you guys know what I can do?
Bing, bing, an, an.
Ping, bing. Ping, an. Ping, an. Symbolizing being safe.
床前明月光，疑是地上霜。
Moonlight,
举头望
明月 ，at the foot of my bed,
思故乡。
With spellbinding performances and immersive sound effects, CGTN Radio presents you Echoes of Ku Liang, available on cgtnradio.com and all major podcast platforms.
Such a beautiful story.
Follow Echoes of Ku Liang as it unfolds across generations, bridging continents and cultures in a celebration of love, friendship, and the enduring spirit of home.
Hometown. How far we apart, Ku Liang, where we call it home.
Discussion keeps the world turning.
This is Roundtable.
You're listening to Roundtable with myself, He Young. I'm joined by Li Yi in the studio and Josh Cotterell on the line. Coming up, the age-old tradition of keeping pet birds in China is undergoing a remarkable transformation as a growing number of young people embrace a more interactive, emotionally connected approach to avian companionship. What's behind this resurgence in pet bird ownership? Tune in for an in-depth look at this trend from a bird's eye view. And when the fairy tale wedding gives way to an unfortunate split, navigating the fate of the once cherished engagement wedding ring can be a delicate and legally complex process for former spouses. We take a look at this transition from I do to I don't. What determines the ultimate destiny of the engagement ring post-divorce? And what about redesigning it into something new? If you have a question that you would like us to answer in a future show, whether it be about something that happened in the news or something you've been wondering about, you can email us a voice memo to ezfmroundtable@foxmail.com. And you can always find a previous show on Apple Podcast at Roundtable China. Now let's move on to the next topic discussion. In China, bird keeping has long been associated with older generations, often leisurely strolling with their feathered friends in bamboo cages. However, in recent years, more young people have started to adopt birds as pets. Despite being low maintenance and relatively easy to bond with, their susceptibility to illness and the limited availability of specialized veterinary care, especially outside major cities, pose challenges. So, what's behind this apparent resurgence in pet bird ownership?
Well, first of all, I think we could really observe more than ever discussion about bird raising in recent years, especially in recent 2 years, I believe, here in China, especially young people, they're quite willing to raise birds. And despite those online discussion, we can also tell the trend from offline stores. For example, an interviewed bird store owner in Hangzhou City, Zhejiang Province, saying that bird has already become one of the best seller pets in the market, especially over the past 2 years. And young consumers have been more than willing to take the time and the effort to feed a young bird themselves. And also called in Chinese as hand-raised, among which parrot has been highly sought after. And also we talk about like cat, coffee bars or dog coffee bars, and now we really have bird coffee bars. For example, like coffee bars here in Hangzhou have also sensed the growing passion for birds, especially parrots. Especially they can really add a little bit like ambience to their places. Mr. Lin, the manager of a coffee shop called Jiri Bird Cafe, said there were over 30 parrots in the coffee bars with many varieties, and because all the parrots were hand-fed, so each one was lively and friendly, which can be quite attractive to customers in the coffee bars. And also since its opening in September 2023, the store has seen a wave of peak customer traffic, and even some young people from neighboring cities would also pay a special visit to this coffee bar featuring different kinds of birds.
Oh yeah, it does seem like offline there's quite the popularity when it comes to pet bird raising. And on the internet, there's a lot of discussion as well. We've seen even the rise of bird influencers who document, record, and share their experiences raising birds, especially parrots. Apparently, this is an obvious favorite. And on Douyin or TikTok's Chinese version, on the Hot Index, which is pretty much a way to measure whether this thing is trending or not. And bird keeping is one of the hot topics, with searches surpassing 9 million over just a week recently. So given all of the popularity online and offline, Josh, have you realized or have you done some research on apparently, you know, one of the key terms associated with pet birds in China is to hand raise them. And what are some of the hallmarks on that?
Well, there is a reporter, Li Yiwei from Nanguo Morning Post, and they noted that majority of young people like to, as you said, hand raise their birds. So what this means is that the breeder keeps the pet bird from its birth to its maturity in the way of hand feeding, similar to the way in which a bird might feed from its parents. And so the bond is much stronger when this happens. Miss Huang, who has raised parrots for 3 years, said that hand-raised birds are best when raised from young birds. Parrots, for example, usually the best way is to keep one when it's about 10 days out of the shell, which can save a lot of late training. So I guess that this is kind of similar to puppies or kittens as well, which of course are the two most common domestic pets, is that if you get one of the pros of getting one from when it's very, very young is that you can create a real bond with it. And it also means that they're more likely to respond to you. Mm-hmm. You've probably heard of this concept of a dog having a master, like singular person, a lot of the time, right? Mm-hmm. And it will only respond to that master. I think that this is quite similar to this.
This is interesting because this actually evokes some past experience of interviewing wild raptor rescuers here in the Beijing Raptor Rescue Center. And then one key takeaway was, you know, for rescuers and rehabilitators, they try their best to not imprint on the rescued birds, meaning that they do not want wildlife birds to be familiarized with human beings and do not want wildlife to expect that they can, let's say, get food or comfort from human beings, because once they're released back into the wild, then it's important to actually keep the distance. So during the rescue process, when they're feeding the rescued birds, they would actually dress up like a tree or like a mother bird with all this kind of camouflage, which I did try, and you can check out the video we posted, I believe last year, of He Yang visiting that place. And so, you know, they were very adamant about, you know, keeping this distance and also this procedure called reducing imprint on wildlife birds. But here, of course, we're talking about domesticated pet animals. And then I suppose having this bond is okay. But I have very mixed feelings about this. They belong in the wild, not in some cage in your home. But that's just my opinion. Yeah,
I think that's quite interesting because when you talk about those experts, they are saying something like they pay like huge attention to the way they deal with or they care those wild birds to make sure they are not really captured by human beings later. Mm-hmm. I think that's really helpful because even though like bird raising is becoming a trend here in China, I mean, it's still like a very niche hobby or a very niche industry, trend compared to, you know, raising cat or raising dog. Still, people have very little idea about birds, about how they think, how they react in certain circumstances, and how we might really treat them in a very good way. So that's why we need more discussion like this, because although people are showing their fondness towards birds, but really we need to learn how to provide equal and proper care mm-hmm. to our animal friends mm-hmm. because compared to like bird raising, I mean, it's not really a new hobby because mm-hmm. we always talk about like grandpas or middle-aged men here in Beijing, they're particularly fond of raising birds. But I'm not really sure, there might be very slight differences when you look at bird raising by young people and by people like a few decades ago, because before people might treat birds like simply like their pet. Mm-hmm. They're, you know, enjoying seeing in the cage and they enjoying the feeling that they carry the cage on the street and they can acquire the admiring eyesight. But now I think people are treating birds and also their pets like their friends. Mm-hmm. They want companionship, of course, but also they want to maybe have more emotional interaction with their pets, of course. Mm-hmm. So that's why I think we really need more discussion and we need more like inspiration and reflection, just as what you said before, Heya.
Yeah, I think that it makes sense why this animal can be many people's favorite or can be quite suited to a lot of people. We have quite a few idioms in English and stuff about birds and stupidity. And for some reason, we sort of talk about things like bird brain and, you know, stuff like this that maybe makes us assume that they're quite stupid, but it can often be quite the opposite. Actually, many bird species like parrots and such are highly intelligent. They can do tricks and solve puzzles, and some of them can even mimic you, right? And mimic human speech. So they're quite intelligent, which is really an attribute that you want in a pet to a certain degree, right? Because you want to be able to have an emotional bond with it and not just have something that's like an inanimate object, although we have spoke before about people making rocks their pets, etc. So maybe it doesn't matter that much. Either way, they're a bit more interesting than I think people think, and they're quite social as well. Birds are quite social creatures and a lot of them do enjoy companionship. So I can sort of understand why people get, you know, prefer to have them. And I guess they're quite low maintenance as well. You know, it's not like you usually need to walk them, you know, or take care of them as much. They tend to groom themselves and stuff like this, I think, birds. But they are really loud and annoying, I think I would say. Just for the record, if anybody was thinking of getting me one, which I'm sure probably not. No offense to the bird lovers.
So
yeah, I had some neighbors that had them, and I don't know how they lived with that.
Do you mean like roosters?
No. I mean, that's like livestock, you know? I mean like a bird in the house.
Well, yeah. Okay. And just to slightly circle back, one small point. You mentioned like raising stones or rocks as pets. Was that you?
No.
Oh, okay.
I collected fossils. I didn't. They weren't
Never
my
mind.
Pets.
I apologize. Moving on. Okay.
Can I just add one more reason that why people might love raising birds?
Yes, please.
Parrots especially, they live much longer than cats and dogs. And that's why people might also, you know, choose to raising birds, because mm-hmm. some wild parrots can live up to 70 to 80 years. So
that's why
people might be thinking that raising birds can also bring me companionship for a longer time. And also it might just be more cost effective mm-hmm. because simply they eat less and you don't really need to, you know, maybe spend a lot of money buying food for them. That's true, actually.
Can they just have my leftovers? Maybe my...
Yeah.
Maybe not my Oreos.
If you don't love them so much.
Oh, I do. If I keep them, I do. I will definitely love them. And there's one more thing I
I believe is important to let everybody know before whether they want to adopt a bird as their pet companion, especially parrots. Apparently, parrots are strictly monogamous, meaning that unlike dogs and cats that tend to distinguish who is the master in the house, birds don't know this. And it's more like an equal relationship. And experts say that parrots are so loyal and monogamous that if they've chosen you, the owner, or somebody in your family as their partner, once this partner is gone out of the picture, the parrot could be so distraught that it pecks itself to death. So it's a huge responsibility, you know, before taking up the livelihood or, you know, basically the dependence of another animal on you. So please, you know, think about this carefully before you decide on ownership. So here's that important question for this topic. Bird as pet to keep or not to keep?
I think that We should be allowed to keep animals, but I think at the same time, one needs to make sure that the environment is suitable. I'm not an expert on birds, but from what I've read before this show, it appears to me that they do need enough space, and a lot of the time they can get quite anxious and uncomfortable when they're limited to this to a certain amount of space. So I think that we have to be really cautious when we think about acquiring this pet. And I think that goes for any domesticated animal, actually, not just birds. But I think birds especially, one other thing is that they can be quite loud. So we also have to think about neighbors and such. Just look at the lifespan, do your research before. And if you do that and you really take care, I think I don't see a massive issue with it at all.
And also keep in mind that not every species of bird can be raised. I think both in China and also in other countries, actually here in China, we have a very strict list of key protected wild animals. So that's why certain species are not really allowed to be raised. For example, four traditional birds that used to be allowed on the market are not really banned. In fact, there are only 9 kinds of birds that can be home kept.
Very useful information, important there. Coming up, beyond the initial heartbreak, some divorcees find themselves pondering the surprising afterlives of their wedding and engagement rings. What about turning them into divorce rings? Stay tuned.
Looking for passion? How about fiery debate? Want to hear about current events in China from different perspectives? Then tune in to Roundtable, where East meets West, and understanding is the goal.
It's the hour of Roundtable with myself, He Young. I'm joined by Li Yi in the studio and Josh Cotterell on the line. Old wedding and engagement rings can be a strong and sentimental reminder of the past. They're often something that holds meaning for people in their lives. So naturally, you would want to make good use of them, even when maybe one decides to dissolve a marriage. Now, some divorcees explore creative ways to repurpose or rehome the jewelry, transforming what was once a token of love into something new and possibly empowering. So we are talking about repurposing and redesigning the wedding ring or engagement ring into a divorce ring, necklace, and one's choice to think outside of the box. Well, I suppose this discussion started off on international social media with one celebrity. She got divorced and she redesigned her rather fancy diamond engagement ring. So what is this divorce ring exactly? And have people found new meaning to it?
Yeah, actually, I don't really think jewelry is to mark important moments in your life, including marriage and divorce is a new concept. Recently, we do see more discussion about this so-called divorce diamond ring, because of that American model and actress, she shared her own experience. So according to Sabrina Leung, which is a brand marketing manager of a Singaporean jewelry brand, Medley Gems, there are generally two types of divorce ring. One is to incorporate the old one into a new one, which to symbolize evolving from changes, or to make a ring that is entirely yours from scratch, called as liberation ring. And according to Jessica Flynn, which is a jewelry designer, the demand for alteration of rings has skyrocketed 300% in the past 2 years, and the fine jewelry brand Lily and Troopy have also been keeping an eye on this trend and attracting great importance to the divorce market. So that's a very interesting concept.
Yeah, Josh, how do you feel about it? Divorce rings. Well, it's a bit weird to, you know, talk about this when you're not even... I would assume you haven't given out the engagement ring yet.
I might be divorced for all you know, He-young, but I'm not. What do I think about this? I think that what it represents to me... I mean, a lot of these trends are so fueled by... and are fueling social media trends that it's sometimes difficult to see, you know, how important they are in the grand scheme of things. But I think that it is significant. I think it represents something really massive, which is a big societal shift in attitudes towards divorce. I think that more and more so, it's less and less taboo, right? And when it comes to many things in society that start out as taboo, a lot of the time it does take some sort of big gesture in order to move things forward. And this is quite controversial, I think, maybe to some degree, or it's at least very symbolic, because the ring is a symbol of bond, right? It's a circle. It means to be unified with another person, right? So it doesn't really make sense to have it as a symbol for a divorce, right? But I understand it, because it does represent empowerment, I guess, but moreover, to me, it represents a bigger shift in attitudes towards divorce, and it, on an even more specifically, on attitudes usually to women leaving marriages, you know, whereas previously in societies it would be more difficult for them to do so, and is still difficult, I think, in many cases, because most of the pictures that I've seen from the research before this show have been from female influencers actually that are getting these divorce rings, not men.
Maybe it's that the women, I mean, I think this is a good thing, gets to keep the ring. Usually it's, you know, the engagement ring is the fancier one that's got the diamond on it. And then the wedding ring is just, in comparison, a plainer wedding band. And I suppose this has something to do with the societal shifts that Josh has just mentioned, that, but I like to just turn your attention to a different angle. That is, well, just given the rising divorce rates, and while in China also, you know, there's been this growing trend of having or wanting a diamond ring for marriage, and therefore, just by the sheer numbers, then there are a substantial number of people who have this diamond ring just sitting in a drawer. Then why not repurpose it, or at least you can wear it and then not make you think of painful memories or unpleasant memories, and just reset it and wear it. Or maybe wear it as a necklace, turn it into a bracelet. Lee, what do you see as, you know, possibly, maybe, we don't know how big this is, but an uptick in the interest of divorce rings?
Well, personally, because I don't really have a diamond ring for my marriage or for the wedding ceremony, I don't really think it's a necessary item that you have to have when you getting married into somebody else. I simply consider like diamond ring in marriage and everything is a concept that is constructed socially and commercially. So it is because at first those jewelry companies, they try to make you believe that you need ring, especially a diamond ring, to mark your marriage. So that's why, you know, newlyweds couples, they're buying this. So I think it's pretty much the same thing when it comes to divorce diamond ring. Of course, it's a huge market. But then I think, do we really need an item or a symbol for either the bond and also for the separation? I think that's a question depends on individuals. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you think you really need that thing to help you mark this moment, to help you feel better, to help you either to announce your divorce to others, then you can just buy your diamond ring, or you can simply alter your original diamond ring, mm-hmm. or you can simply buy whatever you want.
Yeah, of course.
That's just a business strategy, in my mm-hmm. opinion.
Yeah. I suppose for most people, unless you have millions sitting in your bank account and you've already had a whole bunch of expensive jewelry, yachts and villas or whatnot, most people don't. I can't really see, maybe more women might be thinking about this as, you know, guys probably don't care about this at all, but, you know, buying a diamond ring to celebrate your divorce, who does that? Unless you have millions maybe just resting in your bank account. But for more people, it's probably just about, you know, what do you do with the existing one? If you luckily get to keep it, yeah, because, you know, buying that diamond ring could be quite a lot of money initially. And in the past, diamonds have been seen as also a good way to invest and keep the value of your money. But ever since lab-grown diamonds become a thing, and then the growth potential of the price of bigger diamonds, I suppose, you know, above 1 carat in size, have kind of plateaued. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the diamond market in the future as well, just given the fact that nurtured diamonds are becoming more and more common in the market as well. And that brings us to the end of today's roundtable. Thank you so much, Li Yi and Josh Cotterell, for joining the discussion. I'm He Young. We'll see you next time.